Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, September 27th, 2007. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, we conclude our two-part series with the mad fermentationist, Michael Tonsmeyer, on offbeat yeasts. Mike's been doing some experimenting with non-traditional fermenting critters, and he sent us some samples to sample. This week, it's all about Brett, beers brewed with Brettanomyces. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. Now, I'm going to keep the pre-interview comments fairly short this week because we went on for a while during our recording, sipping the wild beers. I do want to remind you that the Great American Beer Festival is coming up in Denver, October 11th through 13th. And we've been there for the past 2 years and have had some amazing experiences touring breweries, talking to Charlie Papazian, you know, just your average run-of-the-mill beer fantasy stuff. and also sampling from the hundreds of breweries at the festival itself. And you can check out the archives of both our audio and video podcasts for those episodes describing our escapades there. And, our coverage of last year's GABF is featured on the beertown.org site, the home of the Brewers Association. So I want to thank the Brewers Association for that. However, since we've already been to Denver this year for the Home Brewers Conference, I've decided to sit out GABF this year. But don't fear, I do have plans to have beer journalists covering the event for us, and we'll look forward to being there in person next year. So if you are going, I am jealous. You will have a great time. Send me notes of what you found. In the episode of Basic Brewing Video that I'll post later this week, Steve and I do kind of a switcheroo with bread and beer, inspired by last week's episode of this short little series. Steve made a bread with beer yeast, and I made a hoppy little Simcoe ale with bread yeast. Did I say that right? Steve makes a bread with beer yeast, and I made a beer with bread yeast. You'll have to tune in to see how they turned out. Check out our it's running on Flash on basicbrewingvideo.com, or you can subscribe via iTunes. Just check us out in the directory. Just a quick tip before we get into the tasting fun this week. It's interesting how these all come in a clump. I've received 3 or 4 emails from extract brewers who are doing split boils and are worried about the gravity readings that they're getting for their original gravity in the fermenter. And I think what's going on, and I think it's fairly common, is that the wort that you've boiled and the water that you're adding to the fermenter are not mixing completely. Most of the sugar apparently is hanging around the bottom of the fermenter, and you're getting a diluted sample in your hydrometer initially. Don't panic, though. The yeast will mix everything together when it gets going. It's interesting. You know, you get 3 or 4 common questions at the same time. Also, this from Bill in St. Louis, Missouri, on cooling hot wort with dry ice. Bill says the biggest issue would be massive splashing. We here at work frequently take dry ice from the people who bring us free frozen custard. Where do you get free frozen custard? Anyway, we take the dry ice and dump it in our cold soft drinks for fun. As amusing as it is, it's a little messy because as it sublimates, or is it sublimates or sublimes? Anyway, it bubbles and splashes. I would imagine the speed of sublimation in a hot liquid would cause a more violent bubbling and splashing. Bill says if one were to try using dry ice to cool a wort, they should take this into consideration. Good advice, Bill. There you go. Sounds like using dry ice in your wort to cool it down before fermentation is getting less and less like a good idea. All right, well, that's it for the little introduction this week. I've been getting a lot of great email, but we're short on time, and I want to keep it under an hour. I appreciate hearing from everybody very, very much. As I said in the beginning, this week is the second part of our series of tastings from Michael Tonsmeyer from Washington, D.C. This week, all the beers were fermented with Brettanomyces, not your standard brewer's yeast. Now, we don't do these kind of tasting shows very often. They're obviously fun for us to do, and I hope that by listening to our comments on the taste and aroma of the beers that we're tasting, and Mike's comments on how they were made, I hope that you'll be inspired to go out on the limb and experiment on your own. Well, Michael Tonsmeyer, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me on again, James.
It seems like only just moments ago that we were talking to you, but it's been a whole week.
Well, my how fun flies when you're doing time. Wait a minute.
And that was Steve Wilkes. Welcome back, Steve.
Hi, James. Hi, Michael.
And Mark Smith is also here.
Nice to see you again.
And Andy Sparks.
It's always a blast to do these shows with you, James.
We are doing, this is the second in our short series of brewing with non-traditional yeast. And the star of the show this week is Brettanomyces, right, Mike?
That's correct, James.
And talk to us about Brettanomyces in general, its characteristics, what it's like to brew with it, and so on.
So the five beers we're trying this week are all brewed with nothing but Brettanomyces. And this is something that there's only a couple of breweries doing in the entire world. Both Pizza Port and Russian River do them on the West Coast. And there's a little brewery in New England called The Shed that did one as well. And I believe De Proef in Belgium does one. But other than that, it's pretty much just homebrewers who are playing around with this stuff. I've been really inspired and really leaned on the crutch of the fine people at the Burgundian Babel Belt, which is a great message board about Belgian beers, and in particular the homebrew board. A lot of the guys focus on lambics and brewing with Brettanomyces and spontaneous fermentation and stuff I'm not even dealing with yet. And they've been doing this stuff since long before I was legally allowed to drink or probably even knew what was in beer. And so they've been a huge help. I was part of a Brett swap they did where everyone sent everyone else a beer they brewed with just Brettanomyces. And so I got to try, you know, eight really fantastic beers that were brewed with all four commercial available strains of Brett, to all sorts of, you know, someone made an old ale with just Brett, someone made Berliner Weiss with just Brett. And the different characters you can get out of Brettanomyces, you just can't get with any other yeast. I mean, the flavors ranged from raisins to peaches to, you know, sour but not funky to apples to, I mean, just anything you can imagine a beer tasting like people can do with Brettanomyces.
Hmm. And what are the challenges in brewing with Brettanomyces, and how's it different from traditional brewer's yeasts?
The biggest difference that I've found and it seems like other people are finding is it reacts very differently to pitching rates and oxygen aeration when you're pitching. Two of the beers that we're going to try tonight, I had no oxygen at the start of fermentation. And people find that gives it, I believe anyway, a much more neutral character, much less funky, much more clean but still fruity and still interesting, but not that barnyard fecal urinal sort of aroma that Brett can occasionally give you.
Mm. Oh, but why miss out with that?
and then two of the other beers I'm doing, and so the two beers that I add oxygen to were also fermented in the mid to high 80s. So probably much higher than anything than maybe Saison yeast can handle. The two I add oxygen to were fermented in the 60s, and so trying to accentuate that funkier, more interesting, more characterful flavor that Brett can provide. And Brettanomyces also, you need a really big pitch.
Hmm.
I try to aim for what I would add for a lager. I mean, maybe a cup of slurry or, you know, maybe a half gallon, three quarter gallon, 1 gallon starter. You know, chilled and decanted and then added. And this is really necessary because Brettanomyces normally, you know, as you know, Orval or Alambic can attest, will take months and will sort of very slowly work at the dextrins and very slowly ferment down to a very dry finish. But if you pitch it big and with all the sugar to start, Brettanomyces acts very differently. It ferments very quickly. Many of these batches I bottled within a month and a half. And will not get that low. It most of them finished around 110, 112, 1008. So dry, but not super dry. Not, you know, down in the very low, very close to 1.000 range that an Orval or most lambics will end up with.
Yeah, traditionally, we hear that Brettanomyces eats a lot of the sugars that standard brewer's yeast can't or won't.
Exactly. And for some reason, it seems like when they're allowed access, so normally they get added later on after all the simple sugars and all the, you know, the mono and disaccharides are gone. But for some reason, when you add them and those are still available, it's like they get used to it. They accept that this is what they're eating, and I'm not sure if they lose the ability to ferment the dextrins or what. But, I mean, some of these beers that we'll try tonight have been in the bottle now for 9 or 10 months, and last I tried them, were not overcarbonated, were not, you know, super attenuated, were still relatively, I won't say sweet, but, you know, just sort of regular beer level of attenuation.
And for those who may not want to order commercial Brettanomyces, there are ready access or readily accessible sources of Brettanomyces, such as the dregs of an Orval bottle, which we mentioned last show.
The thing with Orval dregs is they do contain Brettanomyces B, but they would also contain some Saccharomyces.
Ah, okay.
So you could certainly, if you really built up the culture, primary ferment with them. It would not technically be a 100% Brett fermentation, but it would still probably be really interesting and really tasty.
Now, if you were wanting to build up the dregs of an Orval bottle into, or, you know, other interesting or beers with interesting live yeast still in the dregs, what are your tips in doing that?
Well, I think the first tip, and this is one that you may not be able to necessarily solve. Some breweries will bottle with the original yeast that they use. You know, it's easy; they have access to that yeast. And some of them are very protective of their yeast, and they'll centrifuge out their original yeast and rebottle with a neutral yeast. So that would sort of be the first thing. If you could check online, I believe there's a couple of websites who purport to know or have, you know, asked or, you know, list what breweries do and don't bottle condition with the same yeast. But then you would hopefully get a couple bottles of the lowest alcohol version. So even if you were, say, I know Omegang bottles with their own yeast, and I know that they use their own yeast in most of their beers. And I've heard the brewer quote saying you should culture up from Rare Vos, which is the lowest alcohol version, even if you want to clone Hennepin or Omegang, their strong dark, because the yeast will be more viable. When you get from a lower alcohol container.
Less stressed out.
Exactly. And so you'd hopefully find the freshest bottle you could, and probably a couple of bottles just to increase your chances, and pour them into a very small start. And you have to be very careful, since the yeast count will be low and sort of depleted, and you'd want to be extra careful. Some people actually will douse the lip of the bottle in alcohol and light it on fire. I've never gone to that sort of length. I've just sort of wiped everything down with a sanitizer and gone from there. Some people will actually build a small star in the bottle, so they'll pour out, you know, the main beer to drink, and then pour in, I mean, just a couple of, you know, maybe a 20th of a liter of weak starter fluid just to get it going, and then pour that into maybe a cup star or two cup starter, and just sort of go from there, slowly building it up until you get a nice, healthy, viable yeast colony.
And another way that I've used Orval dregs is that, I got this from Zymergy magazine. There was an article about Orval, and they had they didn't call it an Orval clone, but you know, there were hints that it was supposed to be similar to it. And you essentially just brew a kind of a hoppy pale ale, fairly low gravity, and just pitch the dregs of an Orval bottle at bottling time. And, you know, then bottle, you know, along with priming sugar as well.
Yeah.
and it came out with something that wasn't like Orval, but it was very dry and had some interesting, you know, kind of Brett characters or characteristics. So that, you know, that's an interesting experiment that you could try.
Sure.
You just
don't want to risk bottling if the gravity is too high. You know, if you say it'd be a beer that finished at 10:20 and you add Brett, you'd be risking bottle bombs most likely. But if it's sufficiently low, then that's certainly a good way to do it. Not risk, you know, breading up your system. Not mention, you know having a couple beers turn out dry and tasting like Brettanomyces.
Yeah, and that's again because the Brettanomyces will eat some of those sugars that are traditionally unfermentable.
Exactly.
It will continue to eat those in the bottle if the finishing gravity is too high.
We ended up with after bottling one of the beers we're tasting tonight, we brewed a dark mild, a dark rye mild. And it was really tasty for about 2 months, and we had made the mistake of bottling one Brett beer. And then brewing a batch the same day and putting in the same fermenter. We scrubbed the hell out of it. We soaked in two kinds of sanitizer. And it took about 2 months in the bottle, so about 3 months after brewing, and it, all of a sudden every bottle simultaneously had a light sort of cherry barnyard aroma, which to be honest, is not unpleasant, but is certainly not what we were aiming for.
If it's not planned, if you're brewing for a competition, say, you don't want the beers to be time bombs,
exactly.
Not in a literal sense. They're not going to explode, but they may explode with flavor.
You know, that was actually the strange thing about that batch, and I still haven't figured this out. It never got overcarbonated.
Huh.
Clearly the Brett, you know, has done something, is you know, sort of gotten to this flavor profile, but it's still very low sort of mild level carbonation.
Well, we've talked for a while, and we haven't had any beer. So Andy has the opener at the ready.
The official opener.
Where should we start?
Let's go with the Sebastian, the SEB.
Okay. Ooh, it's a big bottle. We get more
it
beer.
Is. This is, I believe, the last two bottles of this in existence.
Oh.
Oh, my.
And we should mention that you are the mad fermentationist.
Good enough. I made the word up, so it really doesn't matter how it's pronounced.
Say it. We need to get it right.
I believe it's fermentationist.
Okay.
Fermentationist.
And I'll put a link to your blog in the episode description on basicbrewingradio.com. Ooh, this kind of smells like that Orval clone attempt that I made.
Yeah.
This was brewed with Brett Klossenai. I will hereby refer to it as Brett C. I don't really know how it's pronounced, but.
And you call this a mini saison?
It's about I think 10:45. So it's right on that cusp of being, you know, sort of at or below the saison guidelines.
Oh.
I actually submitted this. I'm normally not a competition guy, but I submitted this one to a contest. So, after we drink some of it, I'll tell you what my results were.
Oh. Well, this is, you know, this may be strange, but I get kind of a sweetness, like in the candy. What's the sugary candy? That comes in the little roll and the little cellophane wrapper.
Smarties.
Yeah, it kind of tastes like Smarties to me.
I can see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I smell that, too.
And I love Smarties, by the way.
Liquid Smarties.
Well, this is lovely.
Probably not tart enough to be a Smartie, though. It's nice.
Oh. Yeah. That is very good. Very, very good.
So now I'll let you in on some of the comments I got. Overall impression, could have used more malt.
Huh.
Mainly the comments were that it was bready and that's not appropriate in a saison, which I'm sure the brewers at Fantôme would disagree with. But someone went so far as to say as it would have been more appropriate as a lambic. Which I really don't understand because it's not that sour.
No,
it's not.
But I'm using this sort of, I guess, as an example to say the judging community probably and the style guidelines are just not set up for this sort of brewing at this point.
Which competition did you put this in?
This was a local saison competition. I'm a member of BURP, and so it was sort of the local, you know, bunch of people at a monthly meeting. But a couple of people are, you know, master judges who are in it. One guy has won the Lambic. He was homebrewer of the year in the NHCS one year. And so it's certainly not a low-grade judging community. I mean, it's just... Mm-hmm. Several people actually commented that they thought it had acetaldehyde,
Green apple.
Yeah. Mm. Which I believe is a characteristic of the Brett, not necessarily acetaldehyde. It's you know, probably some related ester.
No, I just keep getting the... It's interesting because it's fairly dry, but then there's that candy sweetness. It's really hard to explain.
It probably just falls outside of a style guideline, but, man, it's fantastic.
Yeah, cool.
But Peter Bouchard would love you.
Part of this is that... it may fall sort of outside of, I guess, what the official BJCP style guidelines say, but according to Farmhouse Ales, I mean, I think the characteristics are right on, I guess, for maybe a historical saison. And he even mentioned things like, you know, contains apple notes, you know, very low alcohol, a bit tart, you know, refreshing, very high carbonation, you know, this sort of thing.
Yeah, I get a little apple at the end, but I think it's great. I mean, I think it's a nice flavor.
And this is actually why the only reason I was mad is because I didn't have many bottles left, and I was looking for some good feedback, and I ended up with sort of not to style. That's my problem with judging is that, you know, I'd prefer that they were more constructive rather than destructive.
Well, you seem to be kind of making your own styles anyway, so
that's why I very rarely enter competitions.
Fabulous beer.
I would drink that on a regular basis.
I should give credit. This is, I believe, almost exactly a ripoff of a beer someone on the Burgundian Babel Belt named Sebastian did. And this is, I mean, I think I tweaked the hop schedule and tweaked a couple of things, but it's almost exactly his beer. So certainly not making my own style completely.
What hops did you use in this?
I believe, hold on a second, I will pull it up. It's Sterling and Mount Hood. Hmm. And the malt bill was just Pilsner and wheat malt. Huh. About 20% wheat, 8% pils, 23 IBU, started around 1050.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about hops, but to me, when I'm drinking this, I'm not thinking about hops.
Yeah, this beer is not about hops. And that's actually why I asked the question, because I couldn't identify
This beer is also about 10 months old now. It's certainly got a little more age. I think it used to be a little more herbal. Because it had half an ounce of hops at both flame out and 5 minutes in a 3 gallon batch.
So that's the mini saison with just Brett C. Maybe we should move on to the mini saison with just Brett A.
I think so.
And that I think that this one.
You should say Sebastian A.
Yeah, it's got a. BB.
Yeah, it says Brewer's Best, actually, top of the cap.
Mark is having duties at the sink.
This one I don't enjoy as much as the previous one, but I think it's still a good beer.
Now, traditionally, what is the description difference between a Brett C and a Brett A?
So they're both cultures that are, I believe, derived from English stock ales, surprisingly. I think this was discussed on your show that the Britanno is referring in some way to the British Isles.
I think actually you got a correction. Somebody said something about that, and it's actually Brittany.
Well, yeah, I think that Raj said something about Brittany being, you know, part of Britain, and it's actually part of France.
But it was owned by Britain for a long time.
Well, yeah, it's just one of those things.
It's one of those things.
Well, I think in that case that then instead of Brett referring to Brittany is to Britain.
Yeah, right.
And so this one is... Woo! A little funk.
Ooh, no doubt.
Ooh, boy, that I stuck my nose in there and I should have wafted instead of smelling directly.
Yeah, you don't want to get a whole bunch of that.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's quite a bit more aromatic.
Funky.
Yes. A little rubbery even, I'd say.
Yeah.
Yes, rubber
yeah.
bandish, yeah.
Yeah.
And this one, I believe everything was exactly the same, except this one had, I ran out of wheat malt, and I ended up using some rye malt. So it's 8% wheat malt, 8% rye malt, 80-something percent Pilsen.
Yeah, this one's not making happy faces, Mike. Yeah, we want more of the previous one.
Yeah. That is intense.
I think the problem with this one, the first one I fermented in the wintertime, and I sort of got up to a nice constant, like 85 degrees. This one was fermented in the middle of summer in my hot D.C. apartment, probably pitched way too hot and probably a very fluctuating temperature.
Hmm. You know, they
or I can just blame the Brett anomalous. So
now, you know, they say that that a rubber bandy character is indicative of maybe autolysis. Could it be that the yeast was just way too stressed out and is producing that kind of rubbery characteristic?
I don't think so. This one, I believe I left for check it out here. This one stayed in the primary for less than 2 weeks.
Hmm.
I mean, it could be that the high fermentation temperature did that to it, but it certainly wasn't an overly long primary like you'd expect.
It's pretty thin. The flavor, I don't get a lot of rubber bandy taste.
I don't either. You know, when I bring this glass up to my nose, it's almost hard to drink it. Some of the funkiness is almost objectionable, but it doesn't taste bad, really. I mean, it doesn't have that taste. It's... You know, actually pretty drinkable.
Yeah, yeah, it's just the smell.
Oof.
If you had a cold, this would be a good one.
Yeah, I agree. And this is actually sort of how I judge beers and how good I did, is how quickly I go through them and how much I have to stop myself from drinking them. And this one, I always seem to have more bottles than I expect. Whereas, like, we brewed a Kolsch about a month ago, and I'm down to my last two bottles. And this one, I probably still, you know, I brewed, you know, 3 months ago, I still have, you know, maybe a 12-pack left of you know, a 3-gallon batch. So I mean, it's certainly not something that I'm biting at the bit to get to.
And you were one of those that I quoted in my the article I wrote for BYO on small batches, and you're certainly taking advantage of the format there.
Yeah, no, it's a great way, particularly when I'm brewing inside and my stove can't get about, you know, more than 6 gallons up to a boil anyway.
Well, what's next?
Moving on to the my clones of Mobetta Bretta, which are both brewed, one with C, one with A again, but this time they both got oxygen and a much lower fermentation temp.
Okay, so we'll go for the
one
this one. We'll go
for the MBB.
MBB on the
yeah. Cap. This is again the C beer.
Okay.
Brett C.
I think this one we may have the opposite opinion, but we'll see. I haven't had one of these in a while.
It's golden color. Nice and clear.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. That one has got some kind of spicy bakery
smell. I like
smell.
The smell of gingerbread.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, this smells really good.
I was almost going to say potato chips.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't argue with potato chips.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that too.
This one has actually improved a lot. This one, for a while, I really disliked it, and has really turned a corner with a little bit more age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I can do gingerbread or I can do potato chips.
This one and we won't be tasting this tonight, but there was half of this that was aged with dried sour cherries that were rehydrated in Pinot Noir, and had an amazingly strong cinnamon aroma to it.
Huh.
But that's good. And when are we going to be tasting that?
Sadly, that batch is gone.
Don't be greedy, Andy. Don't be greedy.
But the second batch had a similar recreation, so we'll see how that one turned out.
Hmm. Oh.
It doesn't taste like potato chips.
No.
This is really good. This is a nice beer.
This is very nice.
Yeah.
This one had a very strong urinal aroma for maybe... And in all seriousness, I mean, I thought this was familiar. A couple other people did for about 3 months. And that's one of the great things about Brett beers is that they age and they really change a lot compared to some other beers. Just because the Brett's still active in there, it's still chomping away a little bit, still turn some things from, you know, alcohols into esters and so on and so forth.
Now, Greg at Craft Beer Radio has claimed that some beers smell like urinal or have a urinal character. And I don't know that he adequately described what he meant. What do you mean when you say urinal character?
I mean Jose's, the restaurant down here.
I mean,
exactly. Certainly not in any way a positive thing. Just sort of very... John. I mean, like you know, I mean, I guess, you know, sort of like when you walk into a bathroom, that sort of just sort of earthy uric acid
so,
unpleasantness.
Yeah. Not a positive thing.
No. I mean, maybe in a very small amount, it could be something.
It would add some complexity, we can say that.
You know, and honestly, I was recently watching a show about dining in Ireland, and they were making blood pudding in a sheep's urinal, in a sheep's bladder, and the 5-star chef was saying the uric acid really gives it just that little hint of something that, you know, really sets it apart.
A hint of something.
Bam!
Yeah.
Certain wang.
Yeah. Well, it does have a little wang to it. There's a certain movie from the 80s. Was it the 80s? I don't know. Hollywood Nights. Was that the name? Anyway.
So
we're off the track maybe. But this is a good beer, even though I can't get the image of a urinal out of my head when I'm trying to drink it.
Yeah. So this one was based on Mobeb Retta by Pete Support, and it's mostly Pilsner again, but with a little bit of Munich Carafoam. Flaked oats, and a little bit of acid malt.
Hmm.
And the Brettanomyces apparently, and hopefully that's maybe what it's done, can take lactic acid and ethanol and make some ethyl lactate out of it, which has, I guess, a very fruity aroma. And maybe that's what's happened. It's sort of taken sort of the negative aromas and esterified them into these sort of more positive, fruity components that this beer has changed into.
I'm sorry, but the words ethyl and lactate together make me laugh. I think I taste a little bit of the oats in there. Maybe it's just, again, my imagination. I don't know.
I think between the oats and the carafoam, this is, I guess, very close to the original recipe. It's trying to give it some body where the Brett can very, very often get very dry. So it started around 1060 and once again ended up right around 1010.
So have you tried Mobeb Retta?
No, I haven't. It was a one-off release from Pizza Port. I hear rumors that it's coming back out again. Pizza Port has bought the old Stone Brewing facility, and it's going to be called the Golden Rule. Hmm. This is something I have a strange affinity for, brewing clones of beers I've never had before.
Well, that way you can't tell if you're wrong.
That's the point. It's sort of like getting to try a beer you've never had before, but your own version of it.
Well, that's delicious.
And the chance that you eventually get to try it, you can say, oh, this tastes just like my beer.
Mm-hmm. And by that time, your beer's already gone, and there's no proving you wrong.
Exactly.
So what's – shall we move on to the MBB2, was this your second attempt to make a Mobeb Retta clone?
Second attempt. The original Mobeb Retta used Brett Anomalous, and that's what I used on the second one.
Okay.
Mm. Boy, that's tasty.
I thought that was a very good beer.
Yeah.
I could
But I think it's sort of proof that it wasn't very good to start, and it's really come around.
And I come over to your house, James. You make me wash dishes.
Yeah. And you bring good beer as well.
That's
so
right.
There's no. Oh. This I get a bit of bubble gum.
Yep.
But with a lot of. Ooh, this is volatile kind of smelling.
Mm-hmm.
So this one's much younger. This one was only bottled maybe 2 months ago, whereas the first one was maybe 7 or 8 months old.
Maybe just a little bit of a solvent.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah. Good.
Kind of a little
Thank
green
you,
apple in the nose. A little bit.
A little wet sock.
Found in the urinal.
No.
No, I don't smell any urinal here.
No, I don't either.
It doesn't smell like pee.
Woo! Well, that's a...
But if I take a good draft of it, I get a kind of a little like a sour apple in the back. Kind of
this
one's
exactly the same recipe as before, except that I doubled the sour malt from half a pound to 1 pound.
Oh.
And switched the Brett C to Brett A. So this one, I had my fermentation fridge up and running by then and had optimal fermentation characters.
Wow. This is
more complex.
Yeah, I would agree. I think I like the previous one better, but mo better.
I don't know.
It's just kind of biscuity. It's actually pretty good.
It's quite a bit different.
Yeah.
And again, like the last one, the smell and the taste really are not very similar. The taste is well-rounded, kind of smooth, pretty easy drinking, not too bitter, not too sour. But the nose is kind of a little funky, a little sour.
Mm-hmm. But I do get some apple in the flavor, though. But I wouldn't call it a defect.
Both of these beers are very low on IBUs. They're both around 12 IBUs.
That's good. That's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, what do you think? Let's give Mark a chance. Mark is hanging around the corner there just... drinking the beers.
I'm just drinking the beers and smell. This one, the nose on this beer is probably the most complex out of all of them that I've smelled tonight. And just wonderful. Like I said, bubblegum, a little solvent, a little green apple.
Mm-hmm.
But the solvent isn't overpowering. It's not like a defect like you would see in most beers where it would be like a fusel alcohol or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's not that. But yeah, agreeing with Andy, the smell doesn't necessarily match the taste of the beer, so it's almost confusing when you taste it.
And that's the thing about Brettanomyces. I mean, it just sort of, as we've sort of seen, it just sort of does its own thing. To think that this beer was brewed with the same yeast that second Brett beer was brewed with, it's completely different. You know, it doesn't have any of that rubber band. It doesn't have any of that, objectionable characteristic. I mean, just sort of changing the oxygen, changing the fermentation temperature can really just bring a world of difference to these beers.
Okay, so review again with us this beer and the difference between the first one, because the first one had kind of the more the more funkiness. So in was that higher temperature, and this is because this I like better. It's more of a mellowed out kind of.
So there are two sets of beers. The first two beers we brewed. And the second two beers, I'm sorry, the first two beers we drank and the second two beers we drank. Mm-hmm. The first two were fermented in the mid to high 80s and had no oxygen, no aeration, none of that before pitching. The second two were fermented much lower, so traditional ale temperatures in the 60s. I mean, both received about 45 seconds to a minute of pure oxygen before pitching.
Okay. So in essence, basically stressed more. The first two were stressed more. They had to kind of adapt to the fact they didn't have the oxygen they probably wanted.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think these are more, to me, more interesting.
More drinkable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that first Brett C beer, in my opinion, is the best Brett beer I've done.
Now you, Andy, you like this one better than the first one of this
the previous one.
Yeah. Only because it's a little more complex. I kind of like the little sour note in the front.
That may be the acid malt.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, see, I was thinking that for me, I like the first one of these two to drink by itself better. But I think I might like this one with dinner better. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I just, you know, I'm sitting here thinking, this one's making me think, oh, what would be good to eat with this? Mm-hmm. But the first one was just like, you know, I'm going to have a beer on the porch and this is going to be really good.
Yeah. So I guess I should break the bad news to people who like this beer is that Y-Yeast discontinued this yeast around April of this year. And it may be coming back eventually, but at this point your only options are for a yeast like this, the sort of very mild Brett is the Brett C from White Labs.
Hmm. Now, I did talk to a Y-Yeast representative. You were there. At
the National Lumber Company.
Yeah, in at when we dropped into the Brew Hut.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And he was saying that they were doing more of these kind of limited releases, seasonal, limited release strains. Saying that you know, when they kept them on the roster all year round, there wasn't much interest in them. But then when they took them off and then put them back on for a limited time. Then there was a lot more interest in, say, the Roselaire blend and things like that. So, this may be a kind of in the rotation for the, you know, the seasonals that they only come out with every now and then.
If I remember correctly, part of the problem was they've dubbed this Brett Anomalous. I guess they were unsure if that's technically, you know, biologically what it is, and they're, I guess, trying to get very specific, you know, and very accurate with what they're naming. You know, sort of the various strains, and so it may come back. You know, when they get it, I'm not sure if it's graded or tested. The story of the yeast, I guess, is that it's actually the yeast. I mean, the sort of the profile they gave was that it was cultured, I guess, in the 50s from a British stout, and then by way of San Diego. And Pizza Port is in San Diego, so my assumption has been that it's actually the Pizza Port Brett Anomalous strain.
Do you all get any sort of a perry, like a fermented pear flavor from that?
I was actually just thinking, you know, I'm on this food thing, and I was actually thinking that pears and cheese, a strong cheese and pears, would be beautiful with this. So,
yeah.
I said green apple before, or apple, but it's more appropriate to say pear. It's a good catch.
I wouldn't even say fermented pear. I'd just say fresh ripe pear.
Yeah.
Although I really don't know what fermented pear tastes like. I don't think I've ever had a
Perry.
Perry.
Put that on your list there, Mike.
I'm sure that won't take too long. Ooh, something else I haven't made.
Well, shall we rinse? And Mark, we've only got one more beer, so you only have to rinse one more time.
Well, we might have some more beer.
Well... One more that Mark has to rinse.
You can rinse
us.
Your own glasses after.
Exactly,
that.
We can do the and tell us about the last beer, Mike.
So the last beer is exactly the same as the beer, same batch, same yeast, same everything as the previous one, except this one in secondary received for 2 gallons 4 pounds of fresh frozen sour cherries that I picked up at a farmer's market, and half a bottle of Pinot Noir.
Oh, can't wait. Yeah, this sounds fun.
I was browsing around the wine store, and, you know, I know literally nothing about wine. And I looked at a bottle of, I think it's called Bear Boat Pinot Noir, and it said Russian River Valley on it. Oh. And I took that as a sign that wild beer would be.
Well, you know, supplication from Russian River is aged in Pinot Noir barrels.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, and they're probably the same people who are complaining that Russian River is using Brett all the time. So I figured the irony was worth the $15 a bottle or whatever it was.
Andy, what are you standing there?
I'm getting my game face on.
You're going to lose your union card.
Yeah, but who's got the beer in their hand?
Be nice to Andy.
Yes.
Ooh.
Ooh, it's nice. Got
beautiful.
A nice pink.
What was that?
We're looking at the color. The color is a nice pink.
That's gorgeous.
Ooh.
Definitely.
Very nice nice to Steve there. Way to go.
Sorry.
Oh.
I'm a good guy.
Well,
sorry, it's hard
gentlemen,
to pour perfectly.
Shall we say cheers
to Michael.
Yeah. And I was just saying that there is a direct flight to Washington, D.C. from Northwest Arkansas now. So, you know.
I'm going to Washington in October.
Are you really?
I am.
late October.
Well, there you
Excellent.
Go.
Excellent. If you'd like to get together for a glass of homebrew or commercial beer, let me know.
I think that's a plan we should attack.
Well, you would definitely have access to more good places to drink beer than we do. We have some nice places here, but around Washington, D.C., there's a lot of nice places.
Well, I don't think I'd wander farther than Mike's fridge.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. we have James's fridge, and I'll have Mike's fridge.
Andy's fridge is a better place than my fridge.
Yeah. But no, like Old Dominion, they have some beautiful beers, and then there's the Dogfish Head tap room up there. So there's lots of good places to go.
There's a new Dogfish Head tap room going in even closer to me. Uh-huh. Hopefully in the next 3 weeks.
I hate that for you,
man. That's terrible.
In Falls Church, I'm sort of closer to the Virginia side of DC than the Maryland side. Gators moves up a ways. So,
Well, this is lovely.
Yeah, it's very. Sort of winey, I guess.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes. It's both. It's beer and wine. Two of the major food groups.
Wine.
although I wouldn't have probably been able to identify the Pinot Noir in it, I wouldn't have said, this tastes like it has red wine in it. You know, I taste fruit in it, but I wouldn't have been able to peg that.
So Pinot Noir originally was very, very heavy-handed. I was mad at myself for just putting a whole half bottle into 2 gallons. Mm. And I think it's really mellowed out a little bit and sort of blended with the cherry character.
Mm. Wow.
It's very nice. Very balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there an official name for beer mixed with wine or beer mixed with
grapes?
I don't think so. I don't know the word for it, but I think there's a mead and grape category.
Right, right. There's a piment. Yeah, there's a piment, but I don't know. Maybe it should be a Tonsmeyer.
Cheers to that.
Oh, but while we...
This is a treat.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's beautiful.
It was a treat.
It's beautiful looking, it's beautiful smelling, it's beautiful tasting. It's just wonderful.
I think the fruit and the wine combined really cover up any sort of the funky notes that the Brett can give you.
But yet there's a sourness there that can't be attributed completely to the cherries, I don't think.
They were sour cherries, so, it's at least, I think a chunk of it is those sour cherries. I don't know how much. I mean, that's the thing about Brettanomyces is, I've done it for a year, and I've made probably 7 or 8 batches, and I still just feel like I'm blindly, groping in the dark for what happens when, you add fruit or when you add, oxygen. Or It's like an entire new realm of brewing.
Well, lucky for us, you're keeping good notes and you're keeping a blog. So
it's been amazing how many people read that blog and seem to be interested in what I'm doing and then doing it themselves. And that's really the goal, is that there's no way I can brew enough, or that the guys at the Burgundian Babel Bell can brew enough to figure out all this stuff. And that, you need to get as many people as you can out there trying these things, figuring out, what happens when. What happens when you add, Brett Lambilicus and, Brett, Anomalous to the same batch and ferment it with fruit, or add, lactic acid, or fermented it. Someone fermented a Brett beer at in the mid-50s and came out with a very clean, lactic Berliner Weiss. Hmm. It's just amazing that same character can be got out of this beer, that the same yeast that's given us rubberiness and peaches and pears and all the other sort of interesting flavors.
Well, I'll be honest, if you had given me this beer and hadn't told me that it was made with a pure Brett, I would have thought maybe it had a little Brett added at bottling, maybe. But
yeah.
It's got a hair of the funkiness, but it's got this. It's just got a well-rounded, nice profile. I wouldn't have thought it was 100% Brett beer at all.
Now, did you say when you added the wine?
I added it, I believe, with the cherries.
In the secondary?
Yes, in the secondary. Okay. I'll check my notes on that one. Yes, in the secondary, and then I left it in the secondary for about 3 weeks before bottling. Mm.
I
just think that's a marvelous beer. I really like this beer a lot, and it's inspired me to do something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Steve's going to make a wine beer.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how different, and sadly we don't have Ambit to try, but I did essentially the same thing with the first Mobab Retta, except I used dried sour cherries since it was the winter time. And it got me sort of a cinnamon character, and a very completely, you know, people who tasted it said, that was actually the beer I ended up using in the Brett swap at the Burgundian Babel Belt. People said cinnamon, potpourri, you know, fall spices, and I remember one person being shocked that I didn't add cinnamon.
I'm going to try a little experiment. We have a bit of the SEB, the mini saison with just Brett C, and I'm going to have just a bit of the wine beer here, and I'm just going to mix just a little.
Well, I'll do the same since I still have
three-fourths
balls.
Oh, the Tonsmeyer, excuse me. You're right. That's right. We have a new classification.
That's nice.
Yeah. Oh, that's nice. There's just a little bit of... We're passing around the backwash now.
Swapping spit here.
I'm good.
You can just kiss James later.
No, he can't. Well, just for the record. Oh my! What a taste experience.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think blending is really the next area I'm going to sort of look at, just because as we've seen a couple of times, you know, you just add a little splash of this, a little splash of that, and it completely changes the character of the beer.
Wow. Well, Michael Tonsmeyer. This is the third time that you have shipped beers to Northwest Arkansas and have amazed us again. And Andy's asking what's next.
there's another sugar experiment on the horizon. I have the sugars and I just haven't had the time to brew. My weekends have been packed of late. But hopefully in the next couple of weeks there'll be another 5-gallon sugar experiment on the way with all manner of interesting and new things for you guys to try.
Wow. Great. Yeah.
Well, that was a great episode. You know, the sugar episode was great. And the hop one was...
Yeah, it was also...
These have all been great experiences, and tonight was very interesting and very inspiring.
Yeah. I actually still have one bomber each of the hop experiments and each of the sugar experiments. And sometime I'm hoping to put together a tasting with a bunch of my friends and just see... See how they've all aged, see where they've all ended up.
Hmm. Well, Michael Tonsmeyer, thank you again for your work and your inspiration. And once again, I will post the link to your blog in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. And we will be following your exploits in the virtual sense.
It's always nice to be on the show, James.
Thanks, Mike. Well, thanks again to Michael Tonsmeyer. You can find a link to his blog in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com. And I can't wait until we get together with Mike again. Have to stay on his good side there so we can get more good beer from D.C. Next week, Chris Colby from Brew Your Own Magazine joins us to tell us what he's been doing to expand his methods of countertop partial mashing. He's been doing some a bit of out there stuff as well, and we'll talk to Chris about that next week. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from, and please check your email to make sure that it's correct on the form. And while you're on our site, you can check out our online shop where you can find great pricing on our DVDs and a combo deal to save you even more. In our first DVD, Introduction to Extract Home Brewing, we walk you through the extract brewing process step by step from boiling to bottling. And in Basic Brewing Stepping into All Grain, we take you through the all grain process from milling your grain to collecting your wort. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order it online from us. And I'll pack it up myself. And we... just for your information, Steve and I shot the last of the video for our third DVD coming up, so stay tuned for details on that. Remember also our shirts and hats. It's the end of summer. It's coming into the end of summer here, and people are buying shirts. So, you know, I guess they're going to be brewing inside wearing their T-shirts. Thanks for everybody, or to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Sudoku, easy to medium. Now, there's somebody that's on my level. That's I get lost in the hard one. And Terrestrial Digital Multidirection HDTV Antenna DB4. There you go. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what there, so no worries. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. It's in that little black rectangle on the right-hand side of the page. The next time you feel like Amazon shopping, we appreciate your support. We'll get a little bit of that. That's all. Till next week, everybody. Till then, thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dodson down there in Austin. Basic Brewing Radio, he also did our logo, by the way. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time. So long.